It is Sunday morning, and you know what that means. It's time for the Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Andy McNamara alongside Showali. Folks, we got fantasy baseball today. Fantasy football continues to evolve with the trades throughout the week. We'll take a look at the quarterbacks in this NFL draft class as we are, geez, just about a month away from the NFL draft in Las Vegas. Our Fantasy Wrestling Listener League also goes on. We're going to need a new listener this week. Each week, new listener with a chance to win some pizza prizes. But Sho, first of all, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, Andy. Thanks for being alongside me on a day where we get to talk about, you know, a whole whack of stuff, right? Blue Jays and spring training. The NFL continues to be crazy. Fantasy wrestling. Triple H retiring. It's pretty crazy, eh? Boy. Like, I feel like the week, every time we come into a Sunday, I always think to myself, like, hey, I wonder if we're going to have to, like, invent something to talk about. And you know what? So far, we haven't.
No. You know what? Yeah, the sports world around everything has been very giving. It's been in a giving mood. So,
it's true.
Listen, the Tyreek Hill trade we're going to get to in a minute, because that has, I feel, just has blown things up in a different direction when it comes to fantasy football and where we're looking at stuff. Combine that with the Devontae Adams side. But you mentioned it real quick. Let's start with a little chat about the game. Triple H, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Paul Levesque retiring from in-ring competition due to health issues. Show, 14-time world champion, officially announced it. He was on with Stephen A. Smith on ESPN earlier this week. And the game is over.
I kind of think too with Triple H, you know, he probably, like, he's probably not going anywhere. You know what I mean?
No.
Like, he's probably not, like, disappearing from wrestling and we'll never see him again. It just, we'll probably no longer see him in, like, in ring actually wrestling people, which, like, you know, makes sense. He's had heart issues and he has a defibrillator, you know, like the pacemaker and all those kinds of things, right? So
yeah.
If that's the case, I fully support him doing what's right for his health. But you'll still see him on TV, right? Like, he's not, like, gonna disappear from our TVs. So that's why, like, I know people were kind of like, it's not that they were down on it necessarily, but I know there were some people who were kind of like, oh no, it's another kind of sad thing, which I get it, but at the same time, it's not like he's like retiring completely, right? Like, I feel like one thing I am eventually looking forward to at Triple H is seeing his, hearing his retirement speech, right? When he's like inducted into the Hall of Fame, right? Like that kind of stuff. Like that kind of stuff is really fun. But he's a living legend, right? There's no other way to put it.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, and the thing is, he wasn't really wrestling that much anyway recently,
yeah, yeah.
So it's not like it's a big change to WWE TV where it's like, oh, he was in the middle of a title angle and he had to retire. I thought he was a little bit older. He's 52. Still in phenomenal shape, but he had, it was like a major heart issue. Said it was like a, hereditary thing. I would also wager, Show, like, I know they said, you know, and I'm sure it is hereditary to a degree. I would also think that perhaps, Triple H, I don't know if he's ever admitted to it, but if you look at the Hunter Hearst Helmsley character from the mid-90s, and then you look at the late 90s, early 2000s, and beyond Triple H, I would think there was maybe a little assistance from some substances, which also can lead to, you know, some heart issues down the road. Maybe just me. I don't know. Your head usually doesn't grow like Barry Bonds and Triple H's head sort of expanded to certain sizes after some uses of substances. That might be a part of it.
He had basically said to First Take that his heart was basically at a quote-unquote a fraction of full strength. It's like, okay. If that's the case, then you would, like, however it got there, you should not be doing strenuous physical activity. Like, you just, like, shouldn't be, right? So, I was just thinking about this. He, like, I know he is in the Hall of Fame as with DX or whatever they were called,
right?
But he's not in the Hall of Fame, like, himself personally, right?
No, I don't think he's in individually yet because he was still a little, you know, active, all that. Obviously, the Wrestling Hall of Fame's weird because you have to be on good terms or dead.
Yeah.
with you have to either be dead or on good terms with Vince McMahon. So there are some guys who are not in or who took a long time to get in who just aren't on good terms. You're like, eh, you know, we all love Coco Beware, but should he be ahead of some other people? Probably not. Yeah, so it's a little bit political, but still, it's something where he'll be in it for sure. And it's a case, too, where at first when I heard, I'm like, okay, it's some sort of work and he'll be back. And then when I saw what was wrong, I'm like, oh, no, this is like if he wrestles again, he could probably die with a machine attached to his heart. So this is not a work, a pretend thing. This is a full retirement from in-ring and Triple H. And again, Joe, like he said in the interview, he was like, well, you know, yeah, these wrestlers never, you're never fully, fully retired. You can always come take a bump, right? So, but in this case, he is. And a lot of it, too, what some people don't realize who might have been fans before, and he's been actually really great building up the NXT brand before the 2.0 resurgence and building up some young stars. Like, he was seen as like, wow, like the talent, the storyline, and now they've gone in a different direction. But he really sort of twisted that part of his career, him and Shawn Michaels, to build up that next generation.
That's true, too. Yeah. I mean, like, again, another guy who has helped change the way, you know, various events in the WWE have been viewed, right? I mean, again, you have to go back, like, I feel like a long time in order to find out, like, kind of to trace that, like, DNA back to other parts of the world of wrestling, right? Like, back to the late 90s, and I mentioned DX. But, yeah, it's true. I mean, he's all, and I think that's why he has been kind of like the face of the WWE for at least a little while, right? Like, certainly him and Stephanie McMahon getting married, and he was like, he's all constantly in the ring. And
well played.
Yeah, right? Well played indeed.
Well played, sir.
I've always been a big fan of Triple H. So, hey,
that's
I'm
job
happy.
Security for you.
I'm happy he's not like he's not going away completely, and like you said, it's like it's never really you're never really gone essentially, right? Until you're gone for good.
Yeah. In wrestling, it seems like you're there until you're, you know, buried. And in some wrestlers' cases, sometimes not even then. Like the Undertaker, that was kind of his thing. But the Triple H, and we'll talk a little bit later about it, and then we'll get on to the football stuff. But his rise from where he like was this like British aristocrat. He had like a bad accent.
Oh, yeah.
He was skinny. He was thin. He was blown up in the Ultimate Warrior's return to WWE. Triple H got destroyed by him in like 11 seconds at WrestleMania. And he took like all this heat after what was infamously known as the curtain call at Madison Square Garden, where Diesel and Razor Ramon, Scott Hall, late Scott Hall, and Kevin Nash. It was their last match in the company before going to start the NWO and WCW. They all hugged in the ring, him, Shawn Michaels, and those two. And that was seen as that kayfabe being broken of that, like, oh, wait, you can't let the fans know you're friends. You just had a match. And only Triple H got punished for it because Shawn Michaels was too successful and got a push. And the other two were gone. So Triple H got buried for a while and had to work his way back up. And, you know, like we said, married the boss's daughter and it worked out pretty good for him.
Our technical producer, Josh Santos, has procured a Triple H clip for us. Ooh. Andy, would you like to hear it?
I would.
Well, let's hear it, Santos.
That makes me sick in my stomach. Every time I look at you guys, it makes me sick to think what you did to me, holding me back. You guys talk about being students of the game. I am the f***ing game, JR. There is nobody that eats, sleeps, or breathes this business more than me. And now it's my time to prove that to the world. SummerSlam is my time to take what is mine, and that is becoming the WWF champion.
You know, Andy, whenever you say something that I hate, I'm going to get Santos to clip part of that and just so he can play, like, you make me sick. You make me sick, Andy.
Have it on the hot button. Just again, I'm glad that was beeped. I was away. I'm like, oh boy. Have the PG version of that one. Just a great character. We'll talk more in the wrestling section, last segment of the show. By the way, folks, if you want to be a part of our fantasy wrestling league, courtesy of our guys at DropTheBelt.com, you win pizza prizes each week. If you win, and we'll see. Listen, the listener did really well this week, but not good enough. Not good enough. Somebody else in our wrestling league did win, so we'll go over that a little bit later. So if you want in and to be the listener. Pick your AEW wrestling fantasy roster for this week. Just text us 590-590, name and location, or hit us up on Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, or at The Fantasy Show. So we'll get into that a little bit later on. But Showman, let's get to Tyreek Hill traded to the Dolphins. My goodness, like what a haul. Just when you think Devontae Adams is gone, it's like, okay. And we heard some rumors sort of out of nowhere, like, oh, Tyreek Hill might be traded. Nah, that's right. How you're in your Super Bowl window. You're the chief. Why would you get? And then kaboom, he goes to the Dolphins.
Yeah, I remember seeing that. I think like that trade came together so quickly that I think I had seen a tweet or something from one of the various insiders or someone in Kansas City saying that there's a possibility Tyreek Hill could be traded. And I was kind of, eh, that's not a thing. Like, that's just nonsense, right? And then I think I went to go eat or something, and then I came back and checked my phone, and I'm like, Tyreek Hill's been traded to the Dolphins. I thought, oh, like, wow, what? Like, that happened really quickly. Yeah, it's true. That was shocking because, like you said, you would imagine they want to surround Patrick Mahomes with as many weapons as humanly possible. I guess it's a contract thing. He didn't want to restructure his contract going back to last year, whereas a lot of the other stars, including Travis Kelce, had. So, I get, hey, look, this is part of what happens, right, Andy, when you pay your quarterback $500 million, essentially, right? Like, this is part of, yes. Like, this is part of what happens, essentially, right? And I'm not blaming Patrick Mahomes. The guy is like is I think clearly a generational talent and has a chance to be one of the best when it's all said and done. But I mean, you know, like, you have to pay the guy, and there's going to be like tertiary moves, right? Secondary and tertiary moves made throughout the course of his deal, and this is going to be one of them. Tyreek Hill felt like he wanted to get paid still. He got a massive deal from the Dolphins as well. I'm curious, though, like the Chiefs essentially signed Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who I feel like you and I have talked about just a million times on this show, mm-hmm. right? Like, whenever we do the DFS stuff or like the Danger Zone, it's like, oh, what do we want to talk about MVS? And it's, I feel like our answer is always, eh.
Yeah, he's fine. Usually no.
You know? Yeah. Where, so like, I wonder now, like, is MVS, is he like a suitable replacement for Tyreek Hill? I actually feel like I don't hate that move, because I feel like if you think that MVS's skill is just as a burner and can get open, and Rodgers just loved throwing it to Devontae Adams to the point where like it was just to the detriment of everyone else in that offense a lot of the times. If MVS is the guy there in the Tyreek Hill role, I'm not saying he's going to be like Tyreek Hill, because I don't think he's that fast, but I mean, he's probably not going to be like he's not going to be completely fantasy irrelevant. You know what I mean?
So I'll reply with, eh, I'll keep the same. I'll keep my same eh for MVS. I think this is another veteran move. I personally believe now that Tyreek's gone, it's weird. It changes Juju Smith-Schuster's signing. It changes true. His role. I was much more comfortable with him as that number two. That's where he's thrived in his NFL career. As a number one, hasn't done well. Hasn't done well when he was given the ball, when he was the guy. So I still think we have a draft move coming from the Chiefs, who, in that deal, of course, got quite a bit of draft capital back. So they got a first-rounder, number 29 this year from Miami, a second-rounder this year, a fourth-rounder, and then in 2023 a fourth and sixth round draft pick. So I would see the Chiefs in a very deep wide receiver class, either bundling or at some point taking a wide receiver in the first two rounds. And you got a whole bunch of different flavors. So we talked about it. Like, you want your big fast guy, you want your big possession guy, you want your little speedy zippy guys. There's a bunch of them. So they'll be too far down to get a Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave from Ohio State, but You can go in a few different directions depending on how you want to do it. Like a Jameson Williams, who's coming out of Alabama, who's coming off of ACL surgery, people said if he didn't tear his ACL, that guy'd be the first wide receiver in this draft. They said he'd be the first one. Super fast, athletic, diverse. Sounds like, I'm not saying he is the same as Tyreek Hill, because they're still different players, but he's 6'1"-ish and super quick. So I could see that guy who's probably going to fall, maybe Kansas City grabs him in the later part of the first round, and then you have your veteran wide receivers in place, and you can bring along a young, super athletic guy.
Okay, I don't mind seeing that. I am looking forward to seeing which wide receiver, like, I'm so much looking forward to seeing which wide receivers go in the first round, or maybe like the top three rounds if we want to like expand it that much, just because, like you said, I mean, the Packers need a wide receiver. The Chiefs need a wide receiver. I dare say the Patriots need a wide receiver. The Browns probably need one more to pair with Amari Cooper. Mm-hmm. You could probably make the case for I literally just named four teams. You could probably make the case for another 4 to 6 teams essentially in the first round that like would be well served if they got one of the top wide receivers. Yeah, like I mean, how many are there? Where like who are going to be true difference makers? Like we like to use the examples in fantasy football of Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase in most recent memory, right? I mean, I'm not saying every single receiver is going to be those guys, right? But at the same time, like you could get something close, right? So I'm genuinely curious to see how it all shakes out. Jameson Williams, like you mentioned, is someone who I'm so fascinated to see what his draft position is, because I feel like there's no way he doesn't go in the first round, maybe even the first, like, I don't know, 20 to 25 picks even. But at the same time, like, you never really know, right? Like, you never really know with some of these teams. Yeah. I mean, how many years ago was it that we were talking about Jalen Reagor going over some of these top guys? It wasn't that long ago.
Oh, Jalen Reagor. Can't stand him. Terrible fantasy pick. See, I'm not an Eagles fan at all. Obviously. But right. It makes me mad for Eagles fans that pick was taken when Justin Jefferson was on the board. That somebody should have been fired for that. That's still disgusting. That makes me angry. That's the disgusting pick. What's Jalen? I could have gotten you in that draft class three Jalen Reagors in the third to fifth rounds. I could have got you. Devin Duvernay was taken by the Ravens in X. That's Jalen Reagor. That's Jalen Reagor, except you saved $2 million. Now you got me all fired up, Joe. it's so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. But yeah, they need people. It is a really deep draft. So you balance that out, Joe, where it's like, all right, do I take a wide receiver in the first round, or do I like somebody similar in the second round that I can take? Who comes available? We remember, look, DK Metcalf, you put him in anybody's top 10 in the NFL, that dude was a second round pick. You know, it all depends how teams view. Oh, because he couldn't run a route. Yeah, how'd that work out for you guys? That's why I said from day one for DK Metcalf. I can teach a guy, I can teach a guy, if he's committed to being coached, how to run a skinny post. Hey, DK, how about you use your 6.4, 4.5 speed and run towards that big yellow thing over there? Can you do that, pal? Yeah, thanks. Okay, I'll take that elite athleticism over somebody else. But you got lots of different options here that you can do that. And now we look at, let's go to the other way, show. What does Tyreek Hill fantasy value become, who was a WR6 last year in fantasy? What does it do on the Miami Dolphins, who are trying to load up? But the big difference is, as we know, there's no more Patty Mahomes. It's Tua time in Miami. What does that do to you, to Tyreek Hill's value?
Boy, I don't know. I'd like to say it's going to remain largely the same, but I mean, look, Tyreek Hill is the kind of guy who can catch a 5-yard pass and turn it into a 75-yard touchdown, right?
Yes.
So,
yes.
Like, I mean, that's clearly still the case, and I have a feeling that they're going to try and scheme the ball into his hands as much as humanly possible. Look, I wonder if, because the new head coach of the Dolphins is coming over from the San Francisco 49ers, if we might not see a Deebo Samuel-like role for Tyreek Hill. Because we already knew, okay, even in Kansas City, we have seen Tyreek Hill rush the ball a little bit, right? Like, I actually think, like, the fantasy value of Tyreek Hill will probably take a little bit of a hit, because a different quarterback, too, is a little less consistent, right? I mean, you hope he isn't this season, but I mean, that's the kind of early read on it. But I feel like actually the really fallout from the Tyreek Hill trade, or the trade, would be everyone else, essentially, right? Like, I don't know about you, but it makes me like my prospects for Jalen Waddle a lot less, which is unfortunate, because I almost feel like now, like Patrick Mahomes did to a degree, and like Aaron Rodgers did with Devontae Adams, like, I almost feel like Tua will have to be forcing the ball to Tyreek Hill on a play-by-play basis. So, I mean, a lot of Jalen Waddle's a lot of his big-time point games last season came from when he was getting like an insane target share, right? Like when he was getting like the, when he was getting targeted like 10 to 15 times a game, and he's turning those 10 to 15 targets into like, you know, 6 to 8 catches, right? Is that still going to be the case? It could be, sure. But I mean, if Hill is rushing the ball a little bit as well, Gesicki is still there, right? They just signed, what, Raheem Mostert? Like, the Dolphins' offense is pretty loaded now, I feel like. But it's just, there's so many guys there. I don't know. Like, I feel like Hill is the only one who might stay even remotely to what he was. Whereas I Waddle, it pains me to say because I loved owning him last year. It just feels like that could be someone who takes a bit of a tumble.
Don't forget, too, about Gaslight Gaskin, who's still on the roster.
Oh, yeah.
Miles Gaskin.
Is Patrick Laird still on the roster?
You know what? I'm looking. I can't see old cement shoes. Laird. He might be gone.
Maybe he's a free agent.
Wow. Who is going to scoop up old cement shoes? Just dragging those piles of cement behind him. Patrick Laird. Ooh. Gaskin. You know what? I'm glad that Miami had made those moves, Chase Edmonds, Mostert, Gaskin, because that show then eliminates even the question in my mind of owning a Miami running back, because that is obviously a huge miss. Oh, Salvin Ahmad is still there, who balled out a few times when he got the chance as well. So you got four backs, right? And if it's a San Francisco-style mindset, we know what the Kyle Shanahan offense could be. Now, he could pick a guy, or he could have several running backs in that system. And it seems like in Miami, you can go for. I think it's an early indication that when it comes to running backs, we are eliminating Miami, at least at this present point. Maybe they'll come in and be like, hey, we love Chase Edmonds. He's going to be the bell cow. Okay, then we change the conversation. But right now, show, boy, I can't touch, especially with all that firepower up front, I can't touch any of those Miami running backs as a reliable force on my fantasy team. I can't start any.
No, at this stage you can't. Like, I feel like, no. Like maybe if something kind of emerges between in the first 4 weeks of the season, I feel like maybe we'll probably be having the conversation of pick this guy up off of waivers. But yeah, for now, I can't see that being something that's too consistent. I think it's just how can it be? Like, how can it be, right? It probably no. I feel like it's almost impossible for it to be, right? So I would hope that it is, but yeah, I can't think that it is. Hey, real quick though, before we move off the Dolphins, I wanted to go back to the Chiefs real quick. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, right? He was drafted, I think, with the I'm just pulling it up here. He was drafted with the 32nd pick in the 2020 draft. He was drafted looking with the final pick of the first round in 2020. And you and I talked about this when it happened, and we were both pretty high on him, and we liked the signing, and you know, he's been healthy, he's been decent, right? Is it a hot take to say, and I know this is like with the benefit of hindsight, is it a hot take to say that CEH may be one of the worst picks made by the Chiefs in the Mahomes era? Like, consider that who went immediately after him. Like, he was picked number 32 overall, right? So okay. Pick 33, the first pick of the second round was T. Higgins. Pick 34, the second pick of the second round was Michael Pittman Jr. Pick 35, the next pick of the second round was DeAndre Swift. So, like, literally the next three picks were players who are used in ridiculously dynamic ways across the league, especially T. Higgins. You can't tell me, based on what you've seen out of T. Higgins, that the Chiefs wished they had T. Higgins on their roster instead. Again, I'm not trying to crap on MVS, but if it was like T. Higgins and Juju,
still on his
rookie
deal,
you'd feel a lot better about that, right, than MVS and Juju.
Yep. Still on his rookie deal. A lot cheaper, right? A lot cheaper there. And that was always – I forgot DeAndre Swift went in the second round. Swift was an absolute steal in a second round. That guy, I personally at that time had going in Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the back of the second round, and that DeAndre Swift should have been a first round pick. So I think they definitely missed out there. They now bring in, now that you mentioned that, they brought in Ronald Jones. So what does that do? Like, there was a lot made like, oh, Ronald Jones is going, okay, well, when has Ronald Jones really made you ever excited from a multiple week perspective? Like, when have you been like, it's been a month, and you're like, wow, Ronald Jones really tearing it up? For like no, he's had flashes, but he got nullified in Tampa Bay. And I think he's certainly the change of back there. So now we have to start to see, show, does in any way this Kansas City team try to become a little more balanced with the run? If, let's say, maybe they don't draft a wide receiver in the first or second round, and maybe their core guys are Juju, MVS, and Mecole Hardman. That along with Travis Kelce. Oh, they got Corey Coleman. Yeah, good. Corey out of the NFL for why? Why?
Right.
Why are you giving Corey Coleman a paycheck? That's ridiculous. And why isn't he last on the depth chart? I'll tell you. I don't know who Matthew Sexton is. I don't know. But he should be ahead of Corey Coleman on the depth chart for Kansas City. I don't even know who the guy is, but he should be ahead of Corey Coleman. Corey Coleman's terrible receiver, Corey Coleman. So maybe we see it turn into more of a run, a little bit more towards the run. I don't know. They could still just swing it, and Patrick Mahomes is great and make a star out of those other guys. But yeah, it's a case, I think, where, I don't know about you, but I still picture Clyde Edwards-Helaire as like a middle of the pack RB2. Yeah, I'll have him on my team, but I'm not going to count on him fully.
Yeah, you know what? I think that's fair. I think that's totally valid. I mean, I don't think he, like, just the way, again, we've said this a million times, but it's just the way the Kansas City offense is constructed. I just feel like it's always going to be on the back of, and the arm specifically, of Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm, maybe that changes now that there's no Tyreek Hill, because I mean, if MVS and Juju Smith-Schuster right now are your 1-2 wide receiver, that obviously means that Travis Kelce is your most dynamic, like, just receiving weapon, even though he's a tight end and not a wide receiver. But I mean, the problem with that is that literally everyone else in the NFL knows that, right? I mean, if you were defending, like, if we got another Chiefs-Bills game, how could the Bills do anything but just put, like, three guys on Travis Kelce and say, all right, beat us with the other guys? You know what I mean? Like, that's how every team is going to defend the Chiefs going forward. And I don't think Travis Kelce has quite lost a full step, but I think he might have been a little bit slower last year. He was still extremely fantasy relevant. He was still the number 2 overall tight end. But I mean, like, you know, as time progresses, it will eventually catch up with him, right? And I mean, he's 32 now, 33 or something. So he's
cusp.
Yeah, like he's right at that point where I think the conversation on Kelce's fantasy value on like a year-to-year basis going forward, I think, like, just out of necessity has to include, like, all right, is this going to be the year? And like we always say, until he actually shows it, I think you just draft him highly and you'd be done with it. But at the same time, like, now, like, I think there's a legitimate conversation to be had about, like, where does Travis Kelce go in drafts? Considering his reputation, and will that inflate his draft value versus now that he's like one of the only really viable members of that offense? Like, should you be wary of that? I'm curious on that.
I still think, like you said, because of the positional scarcity of tight ends for fantasy, he's still going to be the number 1 or number 2 tight end, barring.
Do you take him like with the 5th pick in the first round or something?
Then? No. I don't think you can do that. I think he's more of, let's say, at the turn, you know, if you're in a 12-team league, between 10 and 12, depending who goes. Right? It all depends who goes. I would still rather take him at, let's say, if a couple wide receivers go, like, I'd still rather take him than maybe the 6th best running back, or and like the 4th wide receiver or something like that, you know? Like, I'd still, you still have to value him. But we saw games, and it was that whole Kansas City offense, not just on Travis Kelce. We saw them in a offensive funk for that middle of the season. They didn't quite seem right. Then they got back on track and all that. So I still think you keep him in that area. It's just, all right, like you said, what do we expect? How much should we expect? But the alternative show are Mark Andrews, who, because of this sporadic quarterback play in Baltimore, dude can ball out, or he couldn't. And so you have that. At least I feel Travis Kelce, I know, is going to get better quarterback play consistently. So I'd rather chance him. And then you look at, like, okay, Dalton Schultz balled out in Dallas. All right, well, now Amari Cooper's gone. That should be good news for Dalton Schultz, but we have to wait to see in the draft. Does Dallas bring in another young, hotshot wide receiver? And does that affect things? George Kittle, where is he injury-wise? Do people overdraft Zach Ertz? Does Kyle Pitts take a step forward? Not with Matt Ryan, but Marcus Mariota, right? Like, there's There's a bunch of differences here. It's going to be really interesting. And the Miami part, show, let's swing back to the Dolphins on that part of the trade. Mike Gesicki was tied for eighth as a fantasy tight end. Now you have Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, and Mike Gesicki. And Devontae Parker's still hanging around for now. I think you write him off completely at this point. But Mike Gesicki at tight end, I wonder where we look at him, where he finished in tied for eighth last year. Does this help? Does it hinder? Like, I wonder.
Yeah, I you mentioned Parker too. I mean, Parker, is he a member of the Dolphins when the season begins, or like, is he a member of the Dolphins by the trade deadline? I don't think the answer is a surefire yes. I'll say that much, right?
I think you trade him. Show, like, you brought in Cedric Wilson as well, right? Let's not forget that from like, Cedric Wilson.
That actually,
right? Well, Cedric Wilson was the hot shot. Like, ooh, that's the riser. And then Tyreek Hill goes there. It's like, never mind, never mind. Cedric's out. But if Devontae Parker goes, maybe you slide Cedric Wilson into that spot, right? You get younger, and it goes. But if you look at the size, like Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle show are both 5'10 and both around the 190 mark.
Right.
So while they're different players, they're kind of the same. Like maybe what they should do is just say, Tua, your workload is going to be decreased this year. We're going to operate out of the Wildcat a lot. Just Wildcat it. Just Wildcat it. Go back 15 years. Wildcat.
Oh man, I bet we will see Tyreek Hill like chuck the ball himself a couple times, run the ball. Like I really do think a Deebo Samuel-esque role is going to be in store for him, which is funny just because I mean like he was exceptionally valuable even without that role in KC, but now that he's going to be doing different things, I think that's going to be a big part of it. I really do.
Yeah, it's got to be dynamic. That's going to be really interesting to see where these players go at that point with Tua at quarterback, who, I don't know, Joe, like at this point in his career, I'd consider average at best, right? Like, listen, Miami's given him all the opportunity. So I feel if this doesn't work out or he is just sort of average again, they look to move on from him after next year. Like, I think if he doesn't really take a step forward to prove, like, you have to then make that decision because you have all this talent on the roster, and then what are you doing if you have that type of quarterback? So we could see, if it doesn't work out, Miami trying to go in a different quarterback direction next year too.
Man, that would it's funny, like
you could
saying it out loud, I think is funny because you and I have both been on that train. I feel like before, like we have said to each other and to other people on this program, hey, I mean, like they could do it. It's not out of the realm of possibility. And then like this to say that now with all they've put all of the pieces in front of him and they changed the coaching staff, all the turmoil that Miami has gone through. It just kind of feels like, oh gosh, it's like, do they really want to start over after like just what, two or three seasons? Like, oh gosh, it sounds so unappealing. But I mean, if there was a team that's set up well to do it, like you said, I mean, Miami is absolutely set up to do it. I have a feeling Tua will acquit himself well this year, though. I think he will. Like, I feel like there are no more excuses, and I think everyone gets that. But I really do think that with all the pieces there, barring injury, it would be hard for him to fail. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it would be hard for him to not be put in the best position to succeed.
And they've done a nice job bringing in Teddy Bridgewater as the backup. It's a very smart move by Miami because if Tua underperforms or gets hurt, injury history, folks, remember, Teddy Bridgewater has shown he can come in and distribute and to a certain degree make the pieces around him fantasy relevant. Not at the highest level, but still be a function. We're not talking some major drop-off here, right? Like, I wouldn't consider Teddy Bridgewater that much worse of a quarterback than Tua at this point in his career. You know? So you at least have a functional quarterback there. All right. Let's take the break. We're going to come back. We're going to look a little bit. We talked about quarterbacks. We're going to look a little bit into the quarterbacks in this 2022 draft class. Swing around again as well. Who might be interested? What the fantasy impact of that might be as we get closer to the draft. We'll talk Blue Jay spring training. We'll get to our third base and shortstop fantasy baseball rankings. Fantasy baseball, your drafts. One of my leagues is coming up this week. So they're coming here. So we're going to be going over those rankings for third and short and some fantasy wrestling. Remember, folks, if you want to be the listener GM this week of Team Outsiders in our Fantasy Wrestling League. Hit us up on the text line, 590-590, name and location, or Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, or at The Fantasy Show. And The Fantasy Show will continue after this on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is The Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Show Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
We're rolling, Fantasy Show. Across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Andy McNamara, that's me, that's Show Ali. Get us on Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, and at The Fantasy Show. Fantasy baseball coming up. Third base and shortstop rankings. Get you ready for your fantasy baseball drafts. Show, I got one, I believe it's Tuesday. Right. You got any coming up this week? Like, the fantasy baseball drafts are coming quick because, like, April is, what, end of this week?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's Sunday today, which means that on Friday, before the next show, it will be the month of April. April 1st is on Friday. So, yeah, I think I have one not this week, but next week. Like, after our next show, which is on April 3rd, I think on, like, the 4th or 5th, like, the Monday or Tuesday. I forget which day it's on. But because the season starts on the 7th, right? Like, the actual overall MLB season begins on Thursday the 7th, and then Friday the 8th is the Blue Jays season opener at home, right? So... I think on the right. Yeah, it's at some point, it's kind of like in football too, right? I like to do my drafts for basically all the various different sports as close as humanly possible to the actual season kicking off, just to be on the safe side. Like, I feel like generally speaking, you don't see too many like horrible injuries in spring training because they're so careful with a lot of these guys. But like again, you never really know, right? So I like to make it as close as possible.
Yeah. So we'll talk in the next hour with some Blue Jay spring training report.
Oh, yeah.
All that good stuff. And, whoo, boy, let's go. But, yeah, third base and shortstop rankings are fantasy wrestling from dropthebelt.com, who we absolutely love, and we're having a great time on the fantasy wrestling side. So if we have a listener who wants to play fantasy wrestling, be the GM for this week, you can check in with us. And, hey, if I don't know if it's the first one or whatever, maybe we'll put them into a hat, however many we have, but... you can text us 590-590, name and location, and on Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, and at The Fantasy Show. But, Show, we were talking about the trade, the Tyreek Hill trade, what that means from both teams, the Chiefs and the Dolphins. But as we know, there are still a lot of quarterback questions, I feel. Because even though some teams have addressed their QBs to certain degrees, like, are we buying... that the Seattle, despite the best teammate in the National Football League, DK Metcalf, despite that, despite his love for Drew Lock, what a guy. Have DK Metcalf on your side in life, folks. I refuse to believe that the Seahawks are going to be like, you know what, Drew Lock, Jacob Eason, that'll get us through the NFC West. There you go. No, there's absolutely no way. So a team like that has to look to draft. Atlanta, probably Carolina. Does New Orleans, are they really buying in with Jameis Winston? Do they want to help guys? Like, there's still a lot of teams when we look to who need a quarterback in some capacity. Where does that go? In what's seen in general, Show, as a average quarterback class, there's not that true number one, like, oh, that's the guy I got to have.
Yeah, it's true. I feel like when we compare... The top guys are Kenny Pickett, Malik Willis, Matt Corral. Is it Corral or Corral?
I say Corral, but you know, I'm sure we'll hear Corral. It in different ways.
I always read it like the okay Corral whenever I read it. So but okay, let's go with Corral. Just be on the safe side. So Pickett, Willis, Corral, Howell, Desmond Ridder is someone we've talked about before.
Ooh, love Ridder.
These are the top five guys here, right? And for the most part. And it's just kind of funny to think that probably all of them would go behind basically all of the quarterbacks who went in last year's draft, right? Like Mac Jones, I think, was the furthest quarterback from – like he was the one who went the latest, I guess I should say, of all of the top five. And I feel like – based on what I've read, and I know this sounds like a complete homer take because of the Patriots and my relationship with them and so on, but I feel like even Mac Jones was getting more hype and pop than even Pickett or Willis.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. If we look back, because last year, the funny thing, Show, last year was, You know, I was saying if Mac Jones doesn't go to the Patriots, I don't think he turns into any sort of factor in the NFL. He was the perfect Patriot quarterback, and he's there. And he did had for a rookie season, I thought really good.
And he's a Pro Bowler. He was the Pro Bowl.
You know, like Mac Jones, I think just absolutely fits what the Patriots do to a T. Anywhere else, I don't think he'd be able to do it. So it's all about landing spot. Like how often have we talked about what if? You go back to that 2018 draft. What if Josh Allen was taken by the Jets instead of the Bills?
I know.
He'd be what Mitch Trubisky
is now. Andy. What if Josh Allen was a Brown?
You know what? He would have been done because you had Hugh Jackson as the coach then. I'm convinced if Josh Allen went to any other team, maybe Baltimore would have been a different story. But if he went to any other team that took a quarterback, like Arizona, No. You know, like, you go to any other team in that draft, he doesn't work out because he was so raw.
Can you imagine what your personal feelings towards Josh Allen would be if he was the quarterback for the Baltimore Ravens? Like, imagine like the version of Josh Allen today, but he plays for the Baltimore Ravens.
Oh, I'd be furious and jealous. Super jealous, super furious. I'd be like, ah, guy, look at his haircut. I don't like it. There's not much you can find wrong with Josh Allen, let's be honest.
No.
Right? There's not much technically wrong, physically wrong. But when you look at, like, even teams show to upgrade, do the Tennessee Titans want to try to get a project in behind Ryan Tannehill? That divisional round loss kind of sucked last playoffs, right? Like, where do you look at a team like that? Like, there's so many different... Don't forget about Sam Howell. Sam Howell was a guy coming in from last year who's like, oh, yeah, you know, Sam Howell's going to be one of the top guys. And now he's sort of faded down a little bit to a mid-ish type of pick. And if I'm looking at it this way, Show, despite his tiny toddler-sized hands, apparently, Kenny Pickett, three-inch hands can't hold a cup of coffee. he should be. He is this year's, to me, Mac Jones, although I don't think necessarily as polished. Where he can be a guy who can come in and start, I believe, day one, be an NFL-caliber quarterback in the right situation, right type of system, has probably the lowest ceiling of several of the other top talent in this draft, but he's a day one type of guy that you can say, all right, let's get him in and see what... Actually, my notes in the combine, I'm just looking now, my combine draft notes show, I have him as a Mac Jones comparable. Mac Jones and like a lower-end Derek Carr. His footwork's nice. Good enough arm strength, technically sound. You know, he does everything well. He's good. But can he be great? And that's what you'd expect out of, let's say, a top two pick, which is why I don't think he'll go that high. So you look at Kenny Pickett, Sam Howell, who's undersized. Like, I like Sam Howell show, but he's under 6'1". He's 6 foot and change. You know, so you're looking at a smaller type of guy. And then you kind of go down from there. Malik Willis is really the wild card. He's smallish, too. He's 6 feet. You know, super talented, but is he, to me, he's a less athletic Lamar Jackson with a weaker arm. But who's exciting?
He's worse than Lamar Jackson in every way, but
he's worse.
Could still be good.
Like, those are the comparables going to him, right? It's like, no, all right, well, you know.
It's funny.
He's not as good, but it's like, well, he's really fast. It's like, yeah, but he's not as fast as what you would need to be at that size to come in. I was like,
he's elusive. He's an elusive player. You know what? I will say Malik Willis, I think, is the most interesting to me, like he is for a lot of people, because, like you said, the speed, he moves very easily, it feels like Lamar Jackson, right? Like Lamar Jackson moves so, like, in such a fluid manner when he's like moving around on the field, like without even thinking about it. And Malik Willis kind of looks like that to me, right? So I, you know, he does, I think, need to improve some things as a passer, certainly, like, especially like accuracy and maybe like not just lasering passes, but like, you know, some touch balls, right? Touch passes here and there. But at the same time, I mean, you look at the draft order, right? Malik Willis, we had this conversation with Eric Edholm, like around the combine, and about how like the conversation around Malik Willis is the same that people were having around Trey Lance the year before. which is he could be really, really good. He could also be, like, if he goes to the wrong situation, like a Josh Allen type conversation we were having, it could be just disastrous for his NFL prospects. But, I mean, you look at the draft order, right? I mean, the Lions, do they want to try and pick up? I mean, they're probably going to be bad for a couple of years, so maybe they want to wait until there's a better draft class, which seems fair. Maybe they take the highest-rated offensive tackle and continue building the rest of the team that way before they get a real chance at a good quarterback. That seems like a good strategy. But, I mean, Houston, like you said, they could draft a team. They're the number 3rd overall pick right now. Carolina, they could draft a quarterback. They're at number 6. Mm-hmm. Atlanta's at number 8. Seattle's at number 9. I just feel like while I would love to see one of Malik Willis or Desmond Ridder go to the Seattle Seahawks, there's like a real chance, like a non-zero chance, that by the time you get to pick number 9, all top five quarterbacks are gone. Like there's a legitimate chance at that. I don't think it's necessarily likely, but there's a chance that all those guys go in the top 10 picks, which is kind of crazy considering, like you said, it's not the most heralded class of QBs this year.
And teams will talk themselves into show. They do
That's
it every
what I mean.
Year.
Yeah.
It's the most important position. So you got to keep taking swings. And you're absolutely right. And if that's the case, you're going to have a boatload of talent. Oh, the defensive line from pass rushers to tackles is so deep this year. O-line, not the most exciting to talk about, but another nice class. Wide receivers we chatted about, super deep. Show, I'm starting to get the bad feeling. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to draft Desmond Ridder. And I love Desmond
Ridder. I think so,
too.
I think so. Honestly, I genuinely think so. I do think that.
That dude, I love Desmond Ridder out of Cincinnati. Check out these measurables. Whereas you have Malik Willis, smaller guy. I could see Malik Willis maybe to Seattle, like, hey, it's like Russell Wilson. He's not Russell Wilson. He's not, because he doesn't have the arm of Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson, I think that's disrespectful to Russell Wilson. Malik Willis is not that. But I could see him in that, like, okay, smaller quarterback who can move around a bit. That's what Russ sort of did. Okay, we'll see. But Desmond Ridder, 6'3 and 3/8, 211, 4.5 second 40. You're talking hand size, show 10-inch hands. Take that, Pickett. Take that, baby hands, Pickett. Desmond Ridder, 10-inch hands. This guy showed the other part too, which is why I fear he'll go to the Steelers. Apparently, this guy acts off the field and on the field, maturity beyond his years, leader, super mature. All the tools. Now, still needs refinement in just about every type of area. He got comparisons to Marcus Mariota. I think his upside is better than Mariota. And they say that because he's long, lean type, you know, mobile. I think he could be better than Mariota. But they have that type. And listen, Mariota won a playoff game, right? Like, Mariota's not he's not a scrub. He's going to get another chance to start. But the smooth motion, his footwork is clean on the dropback, which you don't always see out of college quarterbacks who so often play out of the shotgun. What I was watching, show too, for these bigger guys as well, how's your footwork when you're going to throw? Because I saw some bigger guys like a Jack Cohn out of Notre Dame. He's 6'3", but the footwork, he wasn't planting on the back foot. Ridder plants, he pushes. That means he's coachable. Leads receivers with the ball. This guy's all of it. And I know I'm going to talk him up. He's going to go to the Steelers, and then I'm going to have to find reasons why he's not good.
I know. Look, I that's why I let you talk completely uninterupted, because I'm hoping that when he gets drafted by the Steelers, I'm gonna play that whole 90-second segment you just went on, and then we're gonna be like, and then you know that clip that Santos had gotten, it's like, I'm rooting for the Steelers today. We're gonna play that next to it. When Desmond Ridder plays the
Steelers.
Good. So good. Yeah.
And that's the 12th pick. But you know what? To your point earlier, show, it could be you could have 5 QBs go in the top 10 picks, and teams could trade up, of course, or you could see teams maybe wait, or their guy isn't there, and a bunch of guys fall to the later. Maybe we have some crazy trades, people getting back up, like, wow, quarterback X is still here at 25. I got to jump up and get him.
Right, right.
Like the Ridder conversation, show, has been anywhere from a mid-first-round pick to into the second round. That's the range, depending on who you... And let's say you get to 12 at Pittsburgh, and they see a defensive guy, like, oof, got to get him, can't believe he fell. Then you start sinking with Ridder, potentially, right? There's another guy I really like, Cole Kelly, out of southeastern Louisiana, show. I know you're a big southeastern Louisiana fan.
Oh, yeah. I watched a lot of SEL football Oh, yeah?
Yeah. But that dude is 6'7". And I want to go one more little tangent here with the quarterback. The taller guys you see, like let's say a Mike Glennon coming out, where show, you just see the windup. If you see like these 6'7 to 6'8 quarterbacks, and you're like, oh man, this guy's going to get sacked so much in the NFL because the windup is like a giraffe leg for an arm, just like gangly and just takes forever to throw it. Cole Kelly at 6'7", show that guy throws like he's 6'2". Quick, compact release. I love Cole Kelly. I think this guy as well. Again, right situation. Maybe you can sit him for a year, but the other part of, like, he throws, but he also ran for 38 touchdowns in his college career. Like, he faced weaker competition because Southeastern Louisiana, you know, they're not going to national championships, places the ball well. Again, leads receivers. I like the ball placement. I think Cole Kelly with that placement and that sneaky move, like mobility at that size is somebody, if I hope he goes to the right spot, because I think that guy can be really good.
I just want to say two things. First of all, Bailey Zapp is a name I've been watching from Western Kentucky. And I'll be completely honest with you, for no reason other than I think Bailey Zapp is a wonderful name. What a fantastic, like, I hope he succeeds in the NFL just so you can read headlines like the Chargers got zapped or something like that, right? I want to see. I hope he succeeds for no other reason. Similarly, Dustin Crum from Kent State. I hope he succeeds because Crum is a fantastic last name.
A crummy performance by
Exactly.
They write themselves.
Well, he completely gets destroyed. And it's like, yeah, oh, like come on. Like you said, the writes itself.
Crumbles under pressure.
Desmond Ridder. The last thing on Desmond Ridder, Andy. You said you think he's going to get drafted by the Steelers. Oh. Here's my prediction for you. Here's my danger zone prediction, okay, for the draft.
Okay.
If Malik Willis is gone by the 9th overall pick, the Seahawks will draft Desmond Ridder at 9. That's my bold prediction for Ridder. I think he can go as high as 9, and the Seahawks will like almost panic pick him if Malik Willis is not there at 9.
That would be sensational. Oh, please. Just anywhere but Pittsburgh. Because Ravens aren't going to draft a quarterback. Browns aren't going to draft one. Bengals aren't going to draft one.
Right.
It's just, oh, please not to Pittsburgh. Just anywhere but Pittsburgh. And then you look like, yeah, where does Sam Howell go? Like I said, smaller guy, just 6 feet. Like, he's been mocked to Tennessee a little bit. Okay, like, you know, he's got some work to do, and he's a smaller guy. So there's so many interesting little ways in this quarterback class show where it's like, all right. And then you mentioned like Matt Corral, that dude, 6'2", 212 out of Mississippi. And he, again, he's intriguing, but like, he's a little too aggressive. Like, it depends on, I think, the team where he goes. Like, if he falls to the second round, I could see maybe Detroit, because Dan Campbell's like, we like kneecap biting and they're aggressive. This guy's like reckless. Like, he's fearless. He'll throw like 3 interceptions and be like, I don't care. Like Brett Favre fearless and keep going. But he's reckless, and he's got the tools, but, you know, I could see maybe a team like that going. But there's so many wild card options there.
Yeah, there really are. Like, I think the season, like, the offseason has been pretty wacky, all things considered. Like, I know we anytime anything crazy happens, much like we did in the playoffs when it was like Chiefs Bills, and it's like, is this the best playoffs ever, right? And you don't want to be like a prisoner of the moment or like recency bias, but I actually think it may have actually been similarly. The offseason has been pretty wacky as well, and again, you know, you don't want to be a prisoner of the moment again, but I genuinely think this might have been one of the better off seasons in recent memory. I have a feeling the draft will be equally, or at least approach being equally crazy, right? Like, I think we'll see a lot of trades. Mm-hmm. I think we'll see guys go higher than, like, I think we'll see a lot of wide receivers go higher than we imagine. I think we'll see a lot of quarterbacks and maybe defensive tackles and so on go a lot lower than we imagine. Offensive linemen always go pretty high, but anyways, it's going to be a lot of fun. About a month until the draft, almost exactly a month, I think, actually, from the 27th today.
That's right.
So
I'm going to be in Vegas at the Circa for the draft.
Going to
be
no very, missing the it, fantasy still show, open no, show. Andy. You can't miss the fantasy show.
No, I will be flying back Saturday.
Okay.
Way too early. 6:30 a.m. flight out of Vegas.
6:30 our time or 6:30 Vegas time?
Vegas time.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not that early.
So, you know. What? That means I have to be at the airport by like 4.
But it's really 7.
In any case, I'll be back for the Sunday fantasy show on that part, but that'll be fine. Show invite still open. Invite if you want to come to Vegas, we got a poolside seat ready for you at Stadium Swim. Just saying.
Eddie, I'm going to be doing all season. I will be doing pitching changes for the Toronto Blue Jays radio broadcast. So something tells me I can't do that from a pool, from the Stadium Swim pool.
I think you could.
I don't think Ben would appreciate it.
I think you could do it. I think you can handle it. All right. Let's take the break. Speaking of Blue Jays, we're going to talk some Jays when we come back. A little spring training update. How we looking? Third base and shortstop fantasy baseball rankings. And, of course, a little fantasy wrestling talk for our listener league. How you can win some pizza. All coming up on the Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Hour two of the Fantasy Show. Starting up right now across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Andy McNamara, Showali. We'll talk a little more fantasy football before the end of the show. Baseball time coming up. Hit us up on Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, at The Fantasy Show. That's also where you can get a hold of us if you want to participate in our Fantasy Wrestling Listener League, courtesy of DropTheBelt.com. You can text in as well, 590-590, name and location. If you want to be this week's wrestling GM for Team Outsiders, we'll get to that in the last segment, and be able to really see, like, all right, where do you want to move this team? And if you get the most wins for the week, well, or the most fantasy points for the week, you win a pizza prize. But show, the great thing is that even if you don't win as the listener, if you played as the GM at the end of this season, which will end at the end of May for AEW, then you're still entered to win some big Domino's pizza prizes too.
Yeah, exactly. So like Andy said, you can text us at 590-590. I'm monitoring the text line. Or you can get us on Twitter, at AndyMC81 for Andy, at SNSLE with two L's for me, at Fan590, at The Fantasy Show. A lot of ats. A lot of ats.
A lot of hashtags. That's the world we're in.
Exactly. So you text us, tweet us, whatever, and you can DM Andy, you can DM me, and you can get on board. What are they called again? The Outsiders. That's right.
The Outsiders. Yeah. Yes, the Outsiders, who have fared pretty well for our first two GMs.
It's true, actually.
So we'll see how that goes. We'll keep you up to date on that. But sure, let's talk some baseball. We're getting close. We're what? We're got how many weeks away from the regular season? Like 2, 3?
Yeah, two, like I would say, like the regular season starts on April 7th. Blue Jay season starts on April 8th. So that's not this coming Friday, but it's the following Friday. The Blue Jays kick off the regular season, the 2022 regular season. So yeah, like basically just a little under 2 weeks. Like this past Friday would have been 2 weeks, right? So yeah, pretty cool. I can't wait. I honestly can't wait. I can't wait to see who makes the team, who breaks camp with the Blue Jays. I mean, certainly you and I watch and kind of pay attention to the teams like outside of the Blue Jays, right? Like obviously, but at the same time, I'm just so fascinated by some of these guys. Who are playing with the Blue Jays right now, who I honestly never thought would be all that good. And you know what? There are some names. Again, it's spring training. Some of these guys are, they're facing not major league pitching all the time, especially when you get into like the sixth inning and onwards, especially. But mm-hmm. I mean, generally speaking, there are some names with the Blue Jays that I think have been a lot of fun to watch. That's for sure.
Yes. Well, absolutely. And so, you know, in particular on the pitching side, I keep a close eye on my guys, Alec Manoah and Nate Pearson, because of my autographed rookie cards for him. Manoah, how about that? No runs on two hits, struck out 3 over 3 1/3 innings. Let's go.
He was, you know what? He, like, one thing about Alec Manoah we've talked about before, Andy, is that whenever he's on the mound, he looks unflappable, right? Like, he cannot be flapped. He's unflappable, right? He just like that. Nothing really phases him, right? He, even if he makes a bad pitch or a ball's in the dirt or he walks a guy or something, and he did have a couple of walks yesterday as well. But I mean, even when he, like, I think very early on, it might have been inning number 1 or it might have been inning number 2, I forget. But he had runners on the corners and he got out of it and he just kind of like calmly walked off the field. And I don't know. I think that's like an underrated quality for like a super young pitcher. It just seems like the kind of thing you would get from like a vet, like a longtime vet who's like used to it all, seen it all, you know. But not Alec Manoah. He looks fantastic. Like, he looks fantastic, and we expected him to look good, so it's not like a shock. But it's like a nice thing to see that like things haven't really changed since last season.
Well, and he's only 24, of course, super young. I loved last season when they put up the stats. His size compared to NFL tight ends, it was like Travis right. Kelce and Gronk. And I'm like, whoa. Because on TV, you know, you're watching on Sportsnet, and you're watching, you can appreciate size to a certain degree. But it's a little tricky on TV unless you see him standing next to a really short guy or something. But to see that, I'm like, wow, this dude's 6'6", what, 260? And, man, that guy is like, I would only imagine as a hitter, an opposition hitter, you see that, then put him up on a mound. Like, that's going to be an intimidating presence if you're seeing him for the first time.
Oh yeah. I would think so. Right.
I would think so.
He's a big guy, a very athletic pitcher too. Like, I don't know that you see like too many super big, also very athletic guys like who are pitchers, I should say. So that's kind of cool. I don't know. Alec Manoah is a unique player. I still think that had he gotten called up earlier last year, and whatever, it is what it is. He got called up when he was, and he contributed, you know, in a very significant way down the stretch. But I'm convinced that had he gotten called up earlier in the year, he may have been maybe a little heavier in contention for AL Rookie of the Year, right? Like, generally speaking, it's tough. It's tough to have awards like that given to pitchers and not position players. Like, it was probably always going to be like a Ryan Mountcastle or a Randy Arozarena or, I don't know, someone else, right? But
they just play every day.
Yeah, exactly. Different. Like, that's just kind of like the nature of things. But at the same time, I wouldn't mind seeing Alec Manoah get a little more recognition around Major League Baseball. Another guy that I think has certainly nowhere near as heralded as Alec Manoah. Because again, like, the guys you expect to be good have been good this spring training so far. Like, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. belting home runs, right? Bo Bichette getting on base, and, you know, Alec Manoah, Kevin Gausman. You know, you want to see consistency from the guys who are going to play every day. But, like, generally speaking, like, there's still 2 weeks left of spring training. We're going to see them play a lot, and you know, going forward. But there, it's like the guys on the fringes of spring training that I think always fascinate me. Like, Kevin Biggio is not on the fringe by any means, but I wanted to see how he would perform after just a horribly injury plagued season last year.
Yeah.
So that's something I really wanted to, I wanted to see. He walked and hit a home run yesterday. We've continually gotten some more pop from someone like Aurelvis Martinez, which is really cool. He's a prospect, certainly. Will he start the year with the big league team? I have my doubts, but at the same time, could he play for the Blue Jays before the year, like, in the majors before the year is over? I think it's very possible, the way he's been playing. One of the guys who, I gotta say, I did not see this coming. I kind of thought it was kind of like a nothing move at the time, beyond just like a depth thing, but Greg Bird, I gotta say, Andy, the former Yankees prospect Greg Bird, who has been so often injured, has been fantastic. Do we have that clip ready? I'm not sure if we do, but if we do, let's hear it.
I certainly don't.
Okay, we don't. I don't think we do. That's fine. If you could somehow play that for me, Andy, then that'd be great. But either way,
how about you do it, Greg Bird? Dinger. Home run.
Dingers. No. Greg Bird was he's a lefty bat. He's been a nice little addition. He hit a two-run jack yesterday. He's been getting on base a lot. Like, I got to say, there's like a real chance he could open the season with the Blue Jays. Like, again, is he going to have an
left-handed
everyday
bat
role?
Show. Yeah. That's what they're looking for, right? You're looking for a left-handed bat depth, upside guy. 29 already. Can you believe that? Wow. But, like, that's kind of what the Jays were looking for. Can you find an upside guy who can be sort of an off-the-bench lefty? And, you know, maybe if Greg Bird isn't playing every day, hopefully those health issues aren't as big of a concern. I don't believe he's ever played No, he's never even played 100 games in the majors. The most was in 2018, 82 games.
He's been injured a lot. Like, he's been injured a lot. Like a lot in his career. I think that's kind of why the Yankees cut him loose, right? He's just been so many injuries, and I guess they figured he'd get a better fresh start somewhere else, I guess.
So maybe it's a case where, if he's a bench guy, comes off, you know, a little bit of a rotation, not expectations certainly lowered, maybe he can be that type of guy. And certainly that's not where the Jays should stop if you can still upgrade and find another lefty bat that you like. But I think for what the Jays have done this offseason, you know, we can give a little bit of a pass of like, where's another all-star who bats left? It's like, okay, I think you got Chapman. You've revamped the starting rotation. I think we're pretty good. I think we're feeling pretty good about this team.
And well, you know what? We're going to do our third base and shortstop rankings now, I guess. And I'll say this. I was looking at where I wanted to put certain guys in the I like to write my top 15 and then, you know, like rejig it a little bit based on, you know, where I think, you know, maybe off-season moves happened and so on. I got to say, I think Matt Chapman... I think most drafts have Matt Chapman going as a third baseman, like going like in that I don't know, of all available third basemen, maybe like in the 13 to 16 range in terms of like third baseman coming off the board, right? And I feel like there's a real chance that I think Matt Chapman could be a nice value for fantasy players. Like, why don't we do our third base rankings? But like, I just feel like Matt Chapman. Because he was injured, he had the torn labrum, but by all accounts, he's completely healthy now. He's going to get a full 162. He's in a strong lineup instead of playing in Oakland. He's going to hit up and down the batting order, I'm sure. But I just feel like there's like a real chance he hits like 30-plus home runs this year. And I know that sounds like a complete homer take, but I just think that fantasy-wise, I think you want to have... Like, if you miss out on getting, like, I don't know, Rafael Devers or like Jose Ramirez or Manny Machado or something, you don't get one of those guys and you want to wait a little bit... I bet Matt Chapman will return top 10 value, and you could get him outside of, like, I don't know, the top 120 picks probably.
Right. And it's if we're looking at third, and it's an interesting comparison that we're doing third base and shortstop, because shortstop is super deep with talent.
Oh, yeah.
Super deep. But third base, a little top-heavy show, right? It is more of a top-heavy type of situation. It brings into the strategy of... okay, if I know shortstop is super deep, do I, depending where you're drafting, of course, that's always the caveat, do I try to get that upper echelon third baseman on my fantasy team knowing, hey, I can swing back and still get a very good shortstop a little bit later on, right? So I'm with you. You look at it. Jose Ramirez, of course, we were clamoring for the Blue Jays to get him. Looks like he's going to be staying in Cleveland at least for now. And then you look at Devers, Manny Machado. I feel Machado's, to me, show fallen into that third, like ahead, maybe a little bit ahead of Austin Riley in Atlanta, but he's not at that Ramirez and Devers level to me right now. Like, I would much rather have those two maybe at like the end of the first round type of look. You know what I mean? Maybe on the turn, like end of the first, beginning of the second. And then it takes a little bit of a drop down to Machado.
I think that's fair. I think that's totally fair. I will say, I think with the Fernando Tatis Jr. injury, the wrist injury, I think he's supposed to come back like in May or June or something like that. So I don't think it'll be too long until we see him. But at the same time, without Tatis, I wonder if Manny Machado gets a little bit of a boost, right? Like, I wonder if he
could be
is a little more valuable just for now, and then maybe it like drops off a little bit, maybe mid-season. We all know at this point, especially people in Toronto after watching him for years with the Orioles, but I mean, we all kind of like know what Manny Machado is at this point in his career. He's very valuable, but he kind of only valuable in certain categories, right? Strikes out a lot. I just feel like, but I do agree with you. I feel like the tier of Ramirez and Devers is kind of like its own thing. And then Machado, Riley, I have Nolan Arenado, Chris Bryant, who has like eight different positions, but I mean, he will probably largely play at third or some, you know, he'll be moved around for sure, right? But Chris Bryant is I'm counting him as a third baseman. Arenado, Bryant, and then Mondesi, who I've always been a big fan of. I have those guys kind of in that, like, including Austin Riley as well, in that like 4 to 7 range. And I think that's fine. But yeah, once you get outside of that, once you get into like the, I guess like Alec Bregman and Wander Franco are guys you can probably count as well. I know Franco is going to be counted as a shortstop as well. But once you get outside of the top 8 to 9 guys, it's like a pretty big drop off. You know what I mean? Like even the drop off from Devers to that next tier is pretty big. But the drop off from like Wander Franco to the next tier is pretty big too. But and that's what I mean. I think there's like room to explore value there, and I really think that's where people like Ke'Bryan Hayes for the Pittsburgh Pirates, who I think is going to be a fantastic player at some point, and Matt Chapman. I think I'd rather take a chance on them than like, I don't know, just draft like Anthony Rendon and Justin Turner again.
Right, and yeah, you bring up Bregman and Mondesi, and it's like, okay, with you got to consider injury, right? You have to have a backup plan if you're going to go with Mondesi instead of one of the top guys. And you mentioned Chris Bryant and Bregman, like the power, not where you wanted to see it last year from the position. And I think also you have to think about, all right, am I in a categories league? Am I in a total points league? Bregman, I think, is more valuable in the points side. And then you can sprinkle in multi-position guys, which you know I love, show. My guy, DJ LeMahieu. Some leagues you can put him in at third base, you can put him at second base. I think he might be first base eligible too. You can sprinkle him in. So it's for third base, it really, again, depends on your draft strategy. It's thin. So I think I would couple it almost show in with like starting pitching as far as like the true aces. If you want to get one early, you better get one like with your first pick, if not the second. Otherwise, you're going to be left behind.
I think that's fair, and I think, and again, where do you fall on guys I have them ranked a little lower this year, but like DJ LeMahieu and Yoan Moncada, right? Like those guys have been good. I feel for a long time, long enough that I think we all, again, much like Machado, we kind of like know what they're about at this point in their careers. Like maybe some of the splits might change a little bit based on how the team has changed. Like are the Yankees a worse team this year than they were last year? I say yes. So if you agree with that, then does that affect DJ LeMahieu's value? On the flip side, I mentioned Justin Turner before. I mean, the Dodgers are probably somehow like a better team than they were last year. Does that make Justin Turner maybe a slightly better player? It's also very possible. I have these older guys. I have Rendon, Turner, LeMahieu, Moncada in that 12, 13, 14, 15 spot. That's kind of where I stopped writing names down. I'm comfortable with that. But again, if any of Rendon to Moncada slipped into the top 10, if they were like the 9 to 10 guys, I wouldn't be all that shocked, would you?
No. And yeah, Rendon's in that next tier, along with Bregman and Bryant, right? So if you miss out on those top studs, it goes to, okay, where do you want to draw the line, I guess, show, right? Like, how do you want to be somebody who you go all in on other positions and punt a bit on third base and take a flyer and maybe have to be looking at a case where, all right, I'm looking at somebody like, okay, with the multi-position, right, maybe you say, okay, I'll take DJ LeMahieu, who I can put at second or third, depending how I end up at the other position group, right? That's why I like at the higher ends, if possible, to get those multi-positional guys, because it gives you some flexibility, you know? So if I take a LeMahieu, who I think, yeah, I think he's a bit on the, not falling off a cliff at all, but the trajectory fantasy-wise is trending downward slightly. You're still going to be okay, but he's trending downward. You mentioned Justin Turner. I don't know, like Josh Donaldson, we always have a soft spot for him, but I never really can trust those injuries over the years, right? And the age a little bit here. So, you know, do we want somebody like we talked about the Matt Chapman side? I think that might be the best value. I'm just looking up his ADP here, 160. If you can get him 160, Matt Chapman.
I think that's great. I think that's a fantastic. I think you get Matt Chapman at pick 160, you'll be very happy. I honestly think that. I think that's a steal. Yeah, if you miss out on Ramirez and Devers and you want to, and you feel like you don't feel super confident in, like, I don't know, Chris Bryant or Bregman or whatever, and you want to wait and you fill out other positions, I think you will be perfectly happy with Matt Chapman around pick like 150 to 160. I think that's completely fine, and he'll be He may not blow the top off, but I think he'll be more than, like, far more than just serviceable.
And the thing is, Show, as well, what do we always say? You got to know your league. Now, if you're playing, if you're listening in Canada, Blue Jays fans are going to be excited about Matt Chapman, right?
True.
Now, if we're playing in a league in Missouri, maybe there's not so much interest in Matt Chapman, and you could get him at 160.
Know. Maybe he's good in Missouri. We don't know.
Could be huge in Missouri. Could be huge. I don't know. But if you're playing in a league in Canada, maybe Matt Chapman, you got to look at, okay, well, although the ADP overall is 160, I wouldn't be surprised if he went in the first 100 from Blue Jays fans playing fantasy baseball. So that again comes to, where are you? And maybe that's an opportunity, Show, where somebody reaches because they're like, I really want Matt Chapman just because they're a Jays fan and they want, and that's part of the fun of fantasy. But then maybe you look if Matt Chapman goes higher than maybe where he should or is expected to, you get a value somewhere else. And that's all part of it. You got to know your league. Like the league on Tuesday is a lot of Blue Jays fans. So I expect Chapman to go maybe a little higher. So I have to sort of scout around that.
Like I said, if you don't get Chapman, I think my other favorite targets that like will probably round out the top 10 are still Wander Franco and Hayes from Pittsburgh, right? So Franco and Hayes from Tampa and Pittsburgh. Again, Pittsburgh, like, I mean, you know, probably going to be a terrible team this year, right? Like
they're always terrible.
They've been terrible. I legitimately don't really remember the last time they were a good team, but they're clearly in the process of tearing it down to the studs and rebuilding it from, like, literally from the ground up, it feels like. So if that's the case, then if you feel Hayes is not going to be valuable because of that, I won't entirely blame you, but I think if you're picking him again, like, you know, after pick 100, I think you're fine. Like, I think that's perfectly a fine place to pick up Hayes because I think I also think he is a special talent. So if that's the, you know, if you agree with that, then I think you'll be fine with Hayes. You want to do this shortstop rankings real quick?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it.
I have a feeling the shortstop rankings, again, like the top tier, I mean, like it's a very deep group, right? So if you miss out on the top couple picks, you'll probably be fine. But Trey Turner and Bo Bichette and Tim Anderson as the top three, I probably feel like I'd be surprised if any other names crept into the top three, right? Tim Anderson playing for the White Sox, obviously. Trey Turner is so good. He was so good after being traded to the Dodgers. Bo Bichette, obviously, we all know here in Toronto and in Canada what Bo Bichette is all about. And, you know, he's still in a very strong lineup. He's going to be batting at or near the top of the order. Do you have anyone else other than Turner, Bichette, Anderson in your top three? Like, are you changing it up a little bit?
Well, I think so. When you look at it, I'm looking at what the ADP is for these shortstops, and you got at least 13 in the top 85.
Oh yeah,
like that's phenomenal. And what that means again is, if you don't get a Tatis, a Turner, a Bichette, all right, well, you can probably wait on a Xander Bogaerts. A little bit. It's a second round, maybe turn to the third, right? Simeon, where are we valuing? Anderson, like we said, but there's like, I think the studs are the studs here, and you don't want to get too cute about it. Like, if you're going to spend a top pick, like, if they're there, take the stars. Like, we all love the sleepers. We all love the waiver wire pickups. But if you have a chance to take a superstar, you get them. And that's why I think you just have to do that. Then you get into, like, the, you know what, Joe, I'll say this. One guy I'm not, who's in the top 50 for as far as overall picks, is Francisco Lindor out of New York. With the Mets, I'm not buying it, man.
He had a miserable season.
You know what, Joe? I don't really just buy it. It's like, oh, I went to New York. It's like, I don't know. There's just something that doesn't quite seem right. He could easily bounce back. We know the talent. He's still young enough. But Francisco Lindor, from where he's going, I would, you know, if he's there at pick 75, different story. But at pick 49, I'd rather go with like a Corey Seager or a Trevor Story type of thing.
Do you have the ADP stuff up in front of you?
I do. I do now, yes.
What is Javi Baez's ADP with the Detroit Tigers? Javier Baez. I had him as my 10th shortstop, right? Because the way my rankings played out.
72nd overall.
72nd?
He's behind... he's behind Lindor, he's behind Corey Seager, ahead of Carlos Correa. At 72, boy, I would take him earlier than that, personally.
That's what I mean. Yeah, I think Javi Baez, And again, spring training is what it is, right? Like, you don't sure. you kind of take their spring training results like kind of with a grain of salt, because like I said before, like they face major league pitching for the first like three innings, and after that it's like it's just some guys. It's guys who will be playing in the minors for the most of their careers and so on. Javi Baez has been playing very well in spring training. I actually think the Detroit Tigers have some like fascinating pieces to them, right? I mean, like Robbie Grossman is there too still. Can't forget that. I'm sure we'll talk about him when we get to the outfield rankings. But Baez has been very good. And I think the ADP where he's been going in drafts, and you said 72nd, I have him as my 10th ranked shortstop. I think maybe even that might be a little low. I'm being a little. I also think I'm a little more bullish on Baez than most people are. But I again as like a later ish pickup. If you don't want to spend up, like, because if you want to pick Trey Turner or Bobichet, you're going to have to spend like a top five pick. I would imagine, right?
Oh, sure. So,
if not like a top three pick or what have you, right? Especially with Fernando Tatis Jr. injured, which is another factor of the shortstop rankings being shaken up. Like, he's going as late as like the 16th shortstop off the board now, essentially, right? Whereas before he was probably the number one overall pick, essentially.
Yeah.
So, but with him gone, you're gonna have to spend up for the top guys. And if you don't want to do that, or you don't have a top pick, I think you, again, much like the Chapman conversation, I think people will be like very pleasantly surprised about Javi Baez in Detroit this year. Again, I don't know if like the Tigers are making the playoffs, but at the same time, I think they're going to be a very fantasy relevant team, and Baez is going to be a big part of that.
Yeah, they're going to be competitive. And again, it depends on what you also do at second base, because we talk about the position, but Trey Turner, Semien, Baez, also second base eligible. You know, in most leagues,
right, in most
leagues. So you can. So again, so you get like, all right. If I'm looking at for shortstop, like, show. Imagine if you get like Baez and you can mix and match depending what you do at second. Like, oh, that's a hell of an infield. If you can go and swing back, you know, and sort of pop it in. I just wonder. Marcus Semien is such a wild card to me. He's getting drafted 32nd overall in general. And he could have a significantly worse year than he did last year and still have a great season. Like, 45 homers is not happening again in a much worse ballpark and Texas Rangers team. It's not happening. But if he still got 35 homers, like if he had 10 less homers, that's still a phenomenal year, right? Like, he could still have a great year and not be close to what he did last year. I just wonder, with that change of scenery and a lesser team around him, if Marcus Semien, while still being obviously beyond fantasy relevant, he's a starter, but I wonder if where he gets drafted, if people at the end of the year will be like, oh, well, you know, maybe I could have done better with a Tim Anderson or a Trevor Story who were drafted traditionally later.
It's true. No, it is very true. I think Marcus Semien, and for that matter, Robbie Ray, just because they're both guys on the Blue Jays last year who moved on. But I do genuinely think they're both going to regress a little bit. But even if they both regress a little bit, like if Marcus Semien doesn't get MVP votes and Robbie Ray is not the Cy Young winner again with Seattle, I mean, it's not the end of the world. And they can still have, like you just said, fantastic season. So I'm not super worried about those guys. But yeah, I do think Marcus Semien might be getting a little overdrafted for me just personally. But I mean, I would probably still take him in the top 75 picks, like, for the most part. It just, you know, I think, you know, I would rather, I'm a little, you know, how I am. I'm a little more conservative with that kind of stuff. I want to see how they do in new situations. You know, for that matter, too, in the rankings, too, for a lot of the ADP stuff, the additions of new players to existing splits and existing lineups and so on, I really think, I'm really curious as to how it will all kind of shake out. Like, Trevor Story is a name we talked about a little bit. Trevor Story is going to have to coexist somehow with Xander Bogaerts positionally, essentially, right?
Yeah.
Or Carlos Correa just signed. He's going to have to coexist with Jorge Polanco. By and large, I can't imagine that like having another good player will make your team worse by any means. But I just wonder if those kinds of things will change the way you draft. Like, will Trevor Story's addition change where you draft Bogaerts? So, will Correa's addition change where you draft Polanco? I'm curious where you fall on like the addition of new players in the world of fantasy baseball.
I don't think so, Show. Like, I think when you look at it, yeah, like, you know what, let's take the Blue Jays, for example.
Right.
They have a lot of great players. Does that diminish any of them? I don't think so, from being around that great team. Like, we look at lineup protection, right? The only thing, you have to make sure everybody's playing as close to every day as possible. You don't want to get into a situation where some player comes in and all of a sudden he's in some rotation or whatever. That's not the case for any of the players you mentioned. But no, that doesn't. And again, if I can get a guy, like, maybe you can look at both. Like, if you have two players who at shortstop also could play third or second, then you could technically get both, Show, and have one at each. Or if it's only, you know, pop one in utility. Like, I just think when you're looking at talent, you just have to try to get as many players as possible. And if at worst comes to worst, use them as trade bait. Use them, you know what I mean? Like, you can really mix and match, especially if you have a utility spot, which most fantasy baseball leagues do. And to slide them in there, I think it's fine. I think you get the talent. You look at guys who might get overdrafted, like we said with Lindor, maybe Simeon, and think, all right, who else around them do I think I can get? And then you sort of try to pounce on those situations, right? And not just go by name recognition.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, I was just curious where you fall on that kind of stuff. And yeah, the last thing really is just that Fernando Tatis Jr. is injured. So, I mean, don't forget and draft him like number one overall and then be mad when he doesn't play until June. But I think if you're in like, well, certainly if you're starting up a dynasty league, for example, I feel like if you could probably still take Tatis and probably get like a teensy bit of a discount on him. But generally speaking, I still think he's going to be very, very valuable. It's just he's probably not going to go until like the 14th round in redraft leagues. So just keep that in mind when you're making all your rankings ahead of the season on April 7th.
You know who I really like, Show? And not like, again, this is if you miss out or want just even depth later on, even if you got your guy. Jake Cronenworth, who I got last year off of waivers, I freaking love. I love that guy. Popping him, it's like that player was someone you got for free, got you 21 homers. His now he started to dip a little bit near the end of the year, but he was up around, like, I think he finished at 266. Yeah, that's what it's a 266 batting average, but he was up around the 270s. That guy was a multi-category, just nice, steady. If you have somebody on an off day or who gets injured or you want, like, Cronenworth was right there. Dansby Swanson was another one who just a ton. Again, Chris Taylor. I think Chris Taylor was one of the guys, Show, I got who played, like, in fantasy and Yahoo. He had, like, Chris Taylor plays absolutely everywhere. He plays all of the positions. Right. He just doesn't pitch or catch. That's it. You can put Chris Taylor anywhere. Dansby Swanson, Cronenworth. So those are guys, again, who are, you can get into, you know, from pick 120 and beyond as a later who are going to be afterthought. But for depth pieces that you love to have on your bench, those are three names that I really like.
Are we going to fire up the Sportsnet, like the pool, like the, you know, where you pick the players from, like the 1 point value, the 2 point value, like that whole thing where, like, and we had the Fantasy Show group. Are we going to fire that up again if it gets going again on the website?
Yeah, I think it as far as I know, it should be going when the season starts. But absolutely, we'll have our listener league. That was fun last year. We had it's just a different way to look at it, right? It's that weekly setup, which traditionally I like how the Sportsnet one does it because it is the different point value. But in just regular league, Show, I wonder where you come out on this one too. I love the daily tinkering. I hate the leagues where you have to, like, and they have for hockey too, where you have to, you set it at the beginning of the week and then you just leave it. I think that takes a lot of fun out of it because someone could get injured right away or you see a better matchup and you can't do anything about it. So I traditionally just, I dislike those leagues. I think the daily tinkering allows you, it rewards those who pay attention more.
Yeah, you know what? I think that's fair. I do think that's fair. I do like those weekly leagues. I do, because I think it's kind of fun to kind of dig up, like, the I love the two start pitchers and we like do all those segments during the year and all that stuff. I love that kind of stuff. But again, at the same time, I do like the daily stuff as well, because yeah, like you said, you get to kind of, you feel more involved, right? You feel more involved. I would imagine, like, the Sportsnet one that we do, the pool with the listeners, that one is kind of like a hybrid almost, right? Because you are kind of tinkering, like, on a daily fantasy type of way, but it's not quite it's like you're still doing it on a week. Like you set your lineup and then the deadline hits and it's still set for the week, right? So it's kind of like the kind of the best of both worlds. It's kind of interesting that way.
Yeah, no, I agree. So we'll hit what for next week? Our fantasy baseball rankings. We just have outfield left, right?
Yeah, we did the pitchers. We did starting relief pitching. We did first, second base. Today we did third and shortstop. So yeah, we're just into the outfield next week.
Jeez, all right. And then before we know it, folks, it'll be baseball season. Fantasy baseball and real life Blue Jays baseball. Okay, we're going to take our final break. When we come back, fantasy wrestling time, folks. Listener League, how did the listeners do in our AEW DropTheBelt.com Fantasy Wrestling League? And we have a new weekly listener general manager for the fantasy team. So if you want to be that guy, last week, who was it? It was Danny from Guelph was the listener GM last week. So we'll see how Danny from Guelph did. He's entered to win some Domino's pizza. If you want to be the listener GM, you can be chosen by texting 590-590, name and location, or getting us on Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, or at The Fantasy Show. So we'll pick whoever that might be after the show, hit you up on email, and then you can, we'll send you the rosters and you can make your picks and see if you can win yourself or other listeners some pizza prizes. So we'll talk a little wrestling to wrap up The Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is The Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Show Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
And Austin, I know you. You're like me. You eat, sleep, breathe this business. But Austin, while you might be a student of the game, at SummerSlam, I'm going to show you and I'm going to show the world I am the game!
Triple H hanging up his boots, calling it a career with some health issues. What a legend. Welcome back. Wrap up the fantasy show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Andy McNamara. That's Show Ali. You want to be the listener GM this week for Team Outsiders? You got your shot, people. Just text in 590-590, name and location, or on Twitter. At AndyMC81, at SNSLE, at The Fantasy Show. You can be this week's listener GM, like Danny from Guelph was, like Coach Frank was week one. You can be that. And if you finish with the most points that week, you win a pizza prize. And at the end of the season, we're doing All Elite Wrestling right now, the AEW season at the end of May, you will be entered to win, if you're one of our GMs, a giant pizza prize. So you can get those in. We'll pick somebody after the show is done. But before we get into that, Show, the we talked about a bit off the top, Triple H, health concerns and all that with his heart, had a procedure, was near death, and he has to. It's not like, oh, I just want to retire. It's like, no, it's done for you, or you will probably die in the ring, and Triple H has too much going on to risk that.
Yeah, exactly. He has rediscovered a new part of his career as like the, I don't even know what his like actual title is. What's his actual title? Do you know, for WWE? Oh,
what is it, it's Josh? Like, he's like VP. Executive VP of something. Like,
yeah,
he's the owner. He's Vince McMahon's son-in-law, you know. What is it, Josh?
I'm going to look it up because I don't actually know.
Right. Yeah, Josh Santos will have in as well, our technical director, who is, you know what, Show? Let's get to it. Our ratings for this week. So we use, guys, dropthebelt.com. Oh, Josh has the ring.
He's the executive vice president for global talent strategy and development.
what a title.
What a handle.
My goodness.
Can we give ourselves that for like the show? Global right. strategy that wow.
It
goodness.
Definitely sounds better than a lot technical of money. Producer.
We'll call you executive technical. No, I think it's still technical producer for you.
Oh, okay.
Those decisions are above our pay grade, that's true. I think, Andy.
if anything's like executive, like, ooh, that sounds expensive. Back to technical. back to technical. But yeah, Triple H. Josh, any Triple H memories before we move on to our fantasy league? Just 14-time world champ, and part of DX.
I guess the last time I saw him live, I went to the first Roadblock. It wasn't like officially a pay-per-view. It was like a house show. It was a televised house show in Toronto at what was then called the Ricoh Coliseum. And he faced Dean Ambrose for the he had the world title at that point, and Dean Ambrose was trying to win it for the first time. That was probably that was the last time I saw Triple H live.
And now, of course, Dean Ambrose is Jon Moxley.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. So, that's funny, Eddie.
That's who he is.
Real quick, one of my favorite Triple H memories is, like, kind of funny because it's not really a Triple H memory, is when, like, The Rock... Santos had reminded me of this the other day. Like, The Rock, like, did the Triple H, like, he was making fun of him, and he did, like, the Triple H promo. Do you remember that?
Yes, in the late 90s. It was
I should have grabbed that clip.
That's okay.
That was so good. Yeah, with the impersonations. Oh.
Actually, I got another favorite memory is probably when he invaded Randy Orton's house in their feud.
Oh, right.
He, like, kicks in the door.
Out of, like, a horror movie.
Yeah.
And you know which one I like? When they had D-Generation X went in to try with the tank to WCW's outside the
arena.
That's
a classic.
With WCW. Just so iconic. So, yeah, Triple H will not be performing at WrestleMania 38, which, well, that's next week, guys. That's a two-dayer.
Really? It's really next week?
Saturday's
wow.
April 2nd and 3rd.
Wow. So are we doing some kind of WrestleMania segment next week or what?
Yes. So we're going to do so. Our buddies at dropthebelt.com, who we have are doing the wrestling league with for AEW, they have the Pick'em contest. So we're going to do a WrestleMania Pick'em next week. And we'll incorporate the listeners, too, that you can win some pizza. We'll figure that out over the week. But, yeah, WrestleMania 38, 2 days of mania, brother. So we'll figure that out. But let's get to the standings for this week. So we had the listener, Danny from Guelph. The Outsiders finished, I believe, second last week. Took a little bit of a tumble, just to third. So the listeners are in third place. So Danny from Guelph got them to third, the top prize show. And we got to give him his credit. It's the House of Bebe, and that's Josh Santos. Josh, studio audience.
This applause. I wasn't expecting this applause. Please, calm down.
How about that? Man. How
the
about that?
The man who controls the applause, giving himself a hand. I love it.
We have actually a studio audience here. I don't know what you're talking about.
Everyone knows.
Right,
live in
studio.
What the studio looks like.
Josh, your top guy, Adam Cole, 65 points so far through 2 weeks. Keith Lee, Ricky Starks, Sting, and Brody King. Just points-wise. And in Drop the Belt, guys, you get wins on specialty matches if you win, but it's all based around sort of the wins, and also if you interview, if you show up, that type of thing. So you were pretty darn accurate this week, Santos. Not bad.
I saw that they were advertising that tornado tag match, and I just kind of sniped Sting. I think that's really what really saved, like, not saved my week. I wasn't in danger of losing the week, but because I think I won by over 40 points or something like that. But
yeah, you had a good week.
Like, Sting got me 38 points alone, so. It could have been closer.
That's I had Jeff Hardy, who got me, has now 60 points through 2 weeks in that tornado match, which was really good. The Kingdom, our guy Andrew Hustler Lawless, who is for Winnipeg Sports Talk and appears on our sister station out in Calgary, who could be listening right now on 960. The Kingdom fell to second place. Show, oh boy, number five. You're behind the Elite World Order, which is me. I'm in fourth still. You are in fifth with the Bad Guys. Are you anticipating any changes to your roster this week? Are you happy? Are you playing the long game? What are you doing?
Well, first of all, Sammy Guevara, who you picked a number one overall for me, has been gotten me a whopping 2 points so far this season. So thank you. I appreciate that.
Some picks are busts.
It's true. Sometimes
Andy picks them.
Especially when Andy picks them. Well. I did drop, actually, right before the show started, I dropped Britt Baker, and I picked up Andrade El Idolo. I might be completely butchering his name.
Andrade.
So, El Idolo, gonna be, I'm pretty sure, according to AEW's Twitter, gonna be fighting on the 30th. So, I'm hoping, give me some points, Andrade. I need them.
Well, yeah, I guess Santos, he's doubling down because he's facing Darby Allin, so you're going to get points one way or the other with that pick.
Excellent. That's what I like to hear.
And there's probably going to be, like, interference shenanigans, and so I think both guys are going to get you points regardless of who wins that match, so it's not a bad play.
Now, Josh, you, the 63-year-old Sting, who's been jumping off of, like, through tables and has just been a maniac off the top row, who it's incredible what he's doing. You're going to drop Sting, I understand. Rumors have it. The dirt sheets are saying, Santos, you're dropping Sting. Why?
I have dropped Sting, and that's only because, and I might regret this, But he is accompanying Darby Allin to the ring, so he's probably going to get some points this week. But he's not going to be wrestling. So, and that's where the big points are, is when you win a match.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up picking up Dax Harwood because FTR have a match against Gun Club this week, and I'm predicting them to win.
Ooh, great pickup there. I went with Nyla Rose. I dropped Luchasaurus. 0 points for 2 weeks. The champs are getting me nothing. They get me nothing there. So I could regret that. I'm sure maybe I'll swing back at some point and try to pick it up. But Nyla Rose, she's in that sort of beginner build phase for the women's title. So she's in squash mode. You get extra points too if it is a squash. Like if it's against like making their AEW debut, you're like, oh, that guy's already
wrestler.
Yeah, it's like, oh, they're already in the ring. They're going to get destroyed. So I could see her on a few matches like that to get me some points. So I got Nyla Rose there. Wardlow, Santos, real quick before we break, Wardlow being sent home by MJF, I expect him to like appear, but I'm wondering, like, he could be off TV for a week or so, right?
Maybe. I mean, did you take him off your roster?
I haven't yet, no. Okay. He's my first overall pick, so I'm hesitant. Like, I know he'll be back, but I'm like, ugh, that could be dicey for a couple weeks.
I think he'll be back this week.
Yeah?
I think he will.
I'll have to think about it. I'll have to think about it. All right. Okay, for show, for Santos, I'm Andy. You've been listening to The Fantasy Show. We'll talk to you next week across the Sportsnet Radio Network.